Surely you aren't saying that a book can be judged by its first page. Well, actually I am saying that, and don't call me Shirley. Because this is the Page One Challenge, where we read the first page before revealing the title or author of the book. Can a book really captivate you on the first page? That's what we're here to find out. In 3, 2, 1... Page 1. Sliding off his horse, Dan Murphy took 2 paces and fell to his knees onto a white rock outcropping near the crest of the hill. A sharp pain shot through his thighs. Bending low, he shaded his eyes from the midday sun and stared at the glinting yellow lines in the rock. Dan had seen plenty of gold-streaked quartz. This was the real thing. His companion, Ed Jones, jumped down from his horse, shouting, "I told you so! This is the place!" Dan had been crisscrossing the Arizona desert ranges for months, hanging out at diggings and pitching camp with whatever mining outfit would have him. His offers of help, such as hauling rock for no pay, usually brought a grudging grunt of approval from the miners who didn't want to share their haul. At 5'10", the friendly 28-year-old appeared beefy enough to do mining work. Or maybe it was his mule loaded with supplies and brand-new store-bought tools that convinced them to let him join them. By the end of the day, his open-hearted spirit won them over. Over a period of 2 years, Murphy traveled hundreds of miles of remote desert mountain trails throughout the Arizona Territory and New Mexico. He visited mining camps like Chloride, Goldfield, Silver City, and Tombstone. At Kingman, in the Arizona Territory, he befriended the local barkeep, Ed Jones, with whom Murphy had ridden north out of Kingsman to this site where the gold was found. After a few swings with a pickaxe, Jones and Murphy determined that, at least on the surface, the quartz vein was worth their time. Murphy set out to pursue financial backing through Dennis Sullivan, one of the foremost mining men in Colorado. Murphy's sister lived in Leadville, a roaring Colorado mining town, and she probably introduced the two men when Dan visited. On January 3, 1887, Edward Jones, Dennis C. Sullivan, and Dan Murphy named their claim Josephine and recorded it at the Mojave County office in Kingman, Arizona Territory. Their 1,500 by 600-foot discovery turned out to be a gold and silver bonanza. Within days, Murphy was supervising a dozen or more men hauling crystalline gold and pure silver from veins that were, at times, 4 to 6 inches wide. Living in tents on a scrub-covered hilltop at an elevation of more than 6,000 feet, they found water and firewood to be non-existent. Nor was there much edible wildlife save for rattlesnakes and gophers. With this amount of wealth waiting to be mined in such a remote and unprotected area, speed and secrecy were most important. The ore-bearing rocks were loaded into sacks and carried by mule across more than 25 miles of desolate terrain to Kingman, where the recently completed Atlantic and Pacific Railroad passed through with regular stops. From Kingman, they took ore to a smelter where it was pulverized and heated in a retort. The resulting bullion that melted from the slag was cast into gold ingots. That ore may have been smelted near San Francisco in early 1887, but it was not until August 1887 that a smelter opened in El Paso, Texas, which was equal to the distance from Kingman to San Francisco. The scarcity of smelters in the area was a major problem for years to come. Transportation and processing of the ore were frequently a make-or-break situation for a miner. Murphy periodically traveled by train to the Federal Mint in San Francisco, where he exchanged the ingots for gold and silver coins. Suddenly, he was rich. Born the son of an immigrant Irishman, Murphy had banished the poverty of his childhood. That was page one of Ice and Oil by Joseph Francis Ryan, published by Angel City Press in 2021. And while it sounds like the start of a riveting novel about the heyday of California mining, it's actually a true story. The author told me this interesting tidbit. Given that the book falls within the realm of historical nonfiction biography, explicit statements regarding the sexual orientations of the primary characters were constrained by the social norms of the turn of the century. A perceptive reader can decipher those nuances by reading between the lines. As always, if you like this quirky little show, please subscribe and share it with your friends.